friends, fiends, we're getting close to Halloween, whoever you are. We appreciate you being here listening. We are on episode 6 of season 15. So we're by the end of this episode, we will be at the midway point of the season. And Mike, thus far, we are still in order.
That's amazing, actually, considering.
You know, this is like 2 out of the last 3 seasons. We've managed to release all of these in the sequence in which they were recorded, which, you know, given most of our first 10 seasons, that is a minor miracle.
Well, so Firefly.
So what do you think you did wrong that landed us here?
apparently actually planning these things more than, you know, a week and a half before is part of what comes into this.
Yeah, you can't plan things like this. No, stop that.
Yeah. So as the audience can hear, our semi-irregular occasional co-host Mike is back for another episode of Mention and Dispatches.
Yeah.
And the other voice you heard sneaking in there was our buddy Keith. Keith Tracton of Lock and Load Publishing and a bunch of his own stuff. And, you know, Keith, whatever other affiliations you choose to claim.
That'll do for now.
Keith is here because Keith was part of the crew at the fall assembly. I'm sure, like, you know, at this point, either folks are immediately noping out of this conversation or they're like, all right, good, more fall assembly content. I know we lean on it pretty heavy in September and October, but that's because it's one of our major events that we do each year. And so we want to make sure we hit it from all angles. I do want to offer everybody a momentary caution that as we are recording this, I have the US-Australia soccer game on the side monitor. So
You're not supposed to tell people that.
If something exciting happens, I will try to mute before I, you know, either scream in disgust or scream in delight. But I am warning folks that I've got the soccer game on.
Dangers of the internet.
As long as you scream in the accent of the team you're rooting for, that will make this entertaining.
Well, I missed the one Saturday night because we were all over at the assembly, so I didn't see that game. So I'm able to catch this one tonight. This is one of the international breaks where all of the regular soccer leagues take a break so all the players can go play for their national teams. And for many countries, this is close to the end of the World Cup qualification period because the U.S. are one of the hosts for the next World Cup. We don't have to qualify. So we are playing, they call them friendlies. They're not always very friendly, but that's what they call them. And that's what the U.S. is doing. They're playing a friendly against Australia just to be able to get some game reps in. Now that we've just bored half the audience to tears, let's talk about the fall assembly. This was our third fall assembly. The first one where we were not in the game store. The quip that I've used is that we wanted to move out of the store before they wanted us to move out of their store. We didn't want to overstay our welcome, so we went ahead and shuffled our way out. And we found a very nice facility not that far away, which I will let Mike and Keith describe a bunch to you. We had, I want to say it was 27 events total at the end of, by the time we were done doing the registry, 24 total events on the calendar, of which 2 did not happen as scheduled. Basically, we had a couple of folks leave early trying to beat the bad weather home. So we had 2 of them didn't happen. The rest of them all did. And we had a couple of pickup games on the side, some of which were Keith's fault.
So, Mike,
both of you have been to all 3 of these. Mike, what were your initial thoughts, impressions, comments on this year's fall assembly compared to the previous ones?
And I was nervous about moving from the game store, right? Obviously, because it's a really nice game store and they've got a pretty good selection of war games there. And it was a nice space, I thought, and it was around a lot of restaurants and things like that. So I was kind of nervous about going to this new location. But when we got there, I mean, and if you haven't seen it, I posted a short kind of a walkthrough on the channel of what it looks like in there. I was pleasantly surprised at how nice of a space we had. And honestly, you know, having the space to ourselves like that, it was this more, you know, intimate feeling. I mean, it's like there were war gamers in there playing war games, obviously, but you could focus completely on the war games. It was kind of like, to me, a mini Buckeye Game Fest, you know, where you could just walk in there. The only thing going on was wargaming, and it was whatever wargaming you wanted to go on. We didn't have a lot of pickup games, but we did have pickup games, and we had enough space that if somebody wanted to play a game, there was nothing going to stop them to do it, right? So, and the space had the little kitchen, and it had a couple of bathrooms, and the little bar canteen up the hill that was awesome. So the space, the venue was awesome. I thought it was a great improvement.
Yeah. For folks that don't know, just, yeah, we rented a space from the local VFW. They have a main event hall inside the big building, but they have a smaller separate outbuilding out behind the main one that they refer to as the cottage. And that's where we were. Normally there's things like, you know, Cub Scout pack meetings and such that will be in there. There are a couple of groups that meet, you know, and rent the place from them for an evening for, you know, once or twice a month, whatever. We got a form from them for the whole weekend. So we had the space completely to ourselves. Like Mike mentioned, there was a small, kitchen is a misnomer. There's no stove in there, right? There's a fridge and a microwave and a sink, but it worked. You know, we had the fridge where we'd keep a case of water in there for everybody. You know, we had our own bathrooms. We had our own patio out back. We'd go sit on, catch some fresh air and eat out there where we keep the food away from the games. And the VFW runs a canteen. It's, you know, it's a small bar is really what it is. And, you know, cheap beer and microwave food. But, you know, it was there and it worked out. Keith, what did you think about the location and kind of the setup this year?
I really liked the improvement. I like the game store too, for the reasons that Mike said. You know, it had a great selection of games. So you felt you were in a gaming environment. It was smaller and we needed some space. There was enough space here that, you know, I came in and I did the pickup game they're talking about is I actually threw one of my latest designs, the prototype that I just got, onto the table just to show people. And it was on a double table that Bruce Maxwell was running Iron Armor on, and there was space and he was nice. So I laid it out. Yeah. But you know, we had a table in the center where we were running World War 85 for that session, but you know, everybody's far enough away and it was, you know, considering the number of people in the room, it was actually very easy to track your own game, but it was also very easy to track other people's games. The only non-war game I think I got played there was the Dracula game that Mike Nagel's designing. And that as someone said, that sounded like, you know, this crazy cooking show. It's like, well, you have the garlic and the holy water. It's like... They mix them together. Do you have the steaks? Right. It's like not that kind of steak. So it was, you know, but it, you know, I, for me, it brought back memories of, you know, way back when, before Avalon Con spawned from Penn Con at Widener College in my neck of the woods in Pennsylvania. You had that sense of, you know, there were just war games, like Mike said, and you could go through Open Gaming and go from game to game to game to game. And that was followed through with the first Avalon Con. And that was really cool because you got this taste of everything. It was like this buffet. Well, here was the same thing. I got to see, played, and got my questions answered for every single game that was in there. And that impressed the heck out of me because I'm like, wow, I've never played this game. I've been looking at this game for years on videos. This is like an actual live person that I can say, what does that initiative role do? And how do you do that? You know, new Civil War games, new tactical, you know, was it Grand Tactical System?
Yep.
You know, Mike Nagel's, I got to do Mike Nagel's Ancients design. I was like, oh my God, with Mike Nagel. sorry for monopolizing, but we were having a blast and he beat my butt twice and I had so much fun. It's a really good game. And then, you know, Bruce Maxwell was there doing Iron Armor for people and I got to do World War 85. And then there was a new VUCA design that's out on the Russian front that I got to sit down with a Russian front game for the first time in like ages. And I'm like, looking at this
traces
going,
of hubris.
That traces is, of hubris, yeah.
It, and I looked at it's that. It's not new in that, this, I mean, it hadn't been around 50 years. It's been out a couple of years. But
yeah,
it's,
yeah, but
it's that's part of that traces of line of games that it,
right.
It's a Japanese designer that they've been republishing.
Yeah, and I looked at it and went, and I got in depth with the players on that as to how it played. And I'm like, wow, okay, this is really cool. To get the kind of detail that you want, when you want to ask a specific question, so you might know, okay, I see they're doing movement. I see they're doing formation activation and chip pull. And you're looking at the map and you start to get past the mechanics and go, you know, his right flank is open. Don't tell him to go through the right flank. That's rude. But you get the satisfaction of being able to read the map and being able to read the game. And then when I needed to step in for myself to just do something new, and that was Mike Nagel's Ancients game, that was so much fun to get my brain out of World War III.
Yeah.
But I mean, I did bring my science fiction IP, you know, that Cracking the Hammer Bastion, the first in the Firepower Strike series, that now is in prototype because I had everything but the rules. But you know, still, I was just like, I've been doing a lot of World War III. You just do when you design that kind of game. So it was really a pleasure.
I'd argue that Dawn of Battle is actually World War IV, and not
right. There you go.
Exactly right.
But there was you know, the smaller Civil War games, which I hadn't had a chance to get into the larger ones, other than to see them in so many Gettysburg games the last few years. And so, you know, sitting down with, you know, the smaller battles, it was a big Bethel, and just getting to see like tactics.
Yeah.
But you could have the time and the space and, you know, to explore everything over. I mean, I was there. I had the advantage of I was there all 3 days. You know, I didn't have an issue with the weather, but so I didn't have to leave on Sunday. But, you know, Friday and Saturday, there was chock full of stuff to do.
We'll run through the inventory of what all was played here in just a second. But yeah, Keith is, you know, hitting one of the high points of we did cover a lot of ground with what was scheduled and then added to that with the pickup stuff that happened. So. Let's go ahead and dig into it. In terms of what was on the schedule, and folks, you know, have seen us talk about this both in Tuesday Newsday and then some of the convention previews we posted, that things sort of loosely worked out to kind of a morning and a midday and an evening session for the different days. Now, Friday, there wasn't a morning session because things started at noon. We need a little bit of time to get in there and get set up, push tables together. And so Mike got over there a little early. We pushed the tables together. We had it configured so that there were five numbered tables. We ended up adding a sixth table during the convention as kind of a pickup table, although it actually ended up with a scheduled event on it at one point. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but we were able to cram a lot of different games on there. We did have the swap table set up in the back corner again. So there was the whole, you know, take one, leave one kind of thing, but we had plenty of room with those tables to still maneuver around, to even stand around in little clusters and talk about stuff without crowding one of the games. We had plenty of room for people to get to and from the kitchen where the fridge was and to get in and out of the bathrooms without climbing over somebody's chair kind of stuff. You know, so you've got Mike Short, the little video he shot, but it really felt more spacious than I think people expected once we got stuff in there. I think.
Yeah, I mean, there were only, you know, the swap table was up against the wall. That was about it. Even the double table that Bruce Maxwell was on, that might have been a little closer to the wall. You could only sit like one chair back there because the banners ended up there for some reason. But everything else, you could walk around.
Yeah. Well, one of the banners had been out of the front porch. And then on Sunday, once the weather got, well, actually Saturday evening, once the weather kind of kicked in a little bit, we brought it inside. We had it outside Friday, Saturday, just to make sure that people, you know, when they pulled up to the cottage, they went, oh yeah, that's the right place. Now I know where I am. Is why we had that one set up outside on the porch. So what we had the Friday, kind of that midday session, which was really the first session on Friday, we had five full tables running by 1 o'clock. We had Mike Nagel's Off the Line game. So that's World War II man-to-man combat. Simple Great Battles of History. So the GBOH system, but with the simple GBOH rules. Mm-hmm. Traces of Hubris, which was the game Keith was just talking about, the East Front one. We had the Savannah game in the Battles of the American Revolution series. And then Mike was running the Fading Glory game, which is the Napoleonic 20 series as republished by GMT, where they did the collected, was it four in the box, Mike? Is that what it was?
Yeah. There was four in that box.
Yeah. And so that midday session, that first session, we opened up with five scheduled games. So all five tables were going and we had players in every one of those. Mm. So we weren't, you know, hurting for folks or anything. We had two in the Off the Line demo. We had four in the simple GBOH, not including GMs, mind you. We had two in Off the Line, four in simple GBOH. We had one playing Traces of Hubris. The GM was playing against him. The BAOR game was only set for a single opponent because Bill was playing as the opponent. Bill was also using this game session to help generate the material for the article that he's writing for us. And then Mike, you had three or four for your Fading Glory game.
I had, the first day I had three and then the second day I had four.
Yeah. So, because the second day you split it into two games.
Yeah, we had two running simultaneously. Yeah.
So
yeah, I was watching those. That was, it was great. I wish I,
you know, and I don't, out for
me, but it was just, it was so much enthusiasm with everybody.
Yeah, so
and watching it, you know, it's a relatively easy game. So I was following it, you know, with enthusiasm myself.
So well, there's a lot of interest in that. It was amazing how many people showed interest in that, the games that I were running. And if Decision is listening, and I'm sure they're not, but if they're listening, you know, they have the rights to it. They really need to think about doing something with with it, because a lot everyone said this is a great introductory war game. It's fun to play. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, so, secretly, yeah. I have Smolensk at work in my drawer.
So is decision are the ones that have the rights to the Napoleonic 20 games at the moment?
As I understand it, they do, and they even put it up on, I guess, whatever their version of the P500 is, whatever they do a year or two back, and I guess it maybe didn't get a whole lot of attention back then, but I'm not sure anybody even knew, honestly. So
yeah, well, crap. The Australians scored, damn it. That's not good. Ooh. All right, let's turn back to happier things. So we had, you know, very granular tactical World War II. We had a big operational World War II. We had a good Ancients game, and then we had a pair of Gunpowder games opening things up. The evening session on Saturday, two games starting at 5, one game starting at 6. We had Ian Brown was back in town with his Maneuver Warfare card game, which is the one that he designed to be sort of, he's jokingly called it Pokemon for Marines, although it's a little more doctrinally accurate. It's not a collectible card game. Everything's in one box, but it is a card game of modern warfare. And as we are recording this, that thing is now starting to ship from the Dietz Foundation. So, you know, Ian's been working on this thing for 3 or 4 years now. He's had it at all 3 fall assemblies. It is now finally shipping from Dietz. We had Keith's big World at War 85 team game that we'll talk about in more detail here in a second. And we had a Combat Commander game that was a learning game because it was two novices that had never played it before. I was one of them. And I'd actually played it once before, but it was like almost 20 years ago. It was not long after it came out. And so I had completely forgotten how to do anything in the game. But we had Nathan there, who was a great instructor, teacher of the game. And Nathan's very active in the Combat Commander community, like goes to specific Combat Commander tournaments. And he was teaching me how to play, and Don was in the game with me. We had a good time with it. One of the videos that we recorded is actually just like 15 minutes of just let the camera go, recording us playing the Combat Commander game there for a bit. That was the evening session there. And so again, you know, yeah, World War II ended up getting a little overrepresented in conventions like this, but that's because it's overrepresented in wargaming. I just like, can't get away from that.
Well, but, of the choices that were there, all were like, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're all the most interesting to me. You know, it's like, yeah, you've got the big, simple, not simple, but, you know, easy to absorb Russian front, you know, the Caucasus offensive, Stalingrad offensive. And then, you know, Mike Nagel's Off the Line, I watched that demo. I didn't get to do the second demo because he had to chase the weather, but I watched it intently, and I'm like, I remember, you know, my man-to-man training is SPI's original sniper. We're talking, yeah, Psy-move sniper, not the second one, although I had that too. And it just brought back so many memories, but it's so well done where he's integrated a lot of the things that you would have to, all the lessons we've learned since then of, you know, integrating, you know, and movement between, you know, I move some, you move some, the specific types of weapons, everything's smooth and clean. And he again makes this amazing deck of cards. It does a deck of a million things, you know, it has a million tables integrated into it that just makes it run really smooth and fast. But then, you know, the Grand Tactical system I hadn't actually seen before, and I'm always interested in Market Garden versions. I think Hell's Highway is the one for that.
I don't recall off the top of my head, but I'm sure somebody will jump in the chat and correct us.
Yeah. But you know, this was Aachen, I think. The Tsar. I'm sorry. So it was a smaller one, which meant it was really easy to absorb what they were doing as they were doing it. But I hadn't seen it before, so it was a great introduction. All these were great introductions to these things. But you know, these are all the things in World War II that I've been missing, because you can only do so much when you have, like me. I like all genres. You know, like you show me an Ancients game, yeah, World War One, yeah, sure. You know, the World War, whatever it is. You know, there's all sorts of stuff that is out there. These obscure conflicts that there are games on, and I just don't have time to explore them. World War II is huge, so there's lots of aspects to explore.
There's a lot to it. Mike, after your Fading Glory game wrapped, I know you grabbed by deep, but were you able to sit there and watch any of the other games going on?
Yeah, I did. I did a little bit. I regret not playing in some of those games, but yeah, I did watch a few of them going on. By Swords and Bayonets was there, and I really want to try that game. And I really wish I'd been able to sit in on a session of that because it looked like a fantastic game. The art is really good.
Yeah.
That was part of the Saturday slate.
Yeah, it was small footprint. I mean, it's I would love to have sat down and played that. And as crazy as it sounds, I really wanted to see the Dracula game.
Yeah, I was listening to that. I was because I was wondering around at that point. I was listening.
I'm
to
really
that
curious. You know, it's like
what I don't recall on Friday night specifically. I don't recall if there were any pickup games on one of the other two tables that weren't in action with the other things we were doing. And Keith, I know you had a full house for your World at War 85 game because it was a 3v3 team game.
Yeah,
Combat Commander. There was just the two of us playing with Nathan instructing, but he also had Jeff there with him, kind of hanging out. And then the maneuver. Warfare game. I don't remember if it was one or two players in there with Ian, but I know there was at least one person sitting there watching that wasn't playing. I just don't remember everybody that was in there, and I can't specifically recall if there were any pickup games at that time also, but I was focused on the Combat Commander game, so I wasn't really paying attention to the other things going on. So Saturday we got started kind of early. It was a 9 a.m. kickoff for that, and that's where we got really busy at that point for the morning session between, you know, 9 and 10. Again, we had five tables full of scheduled events, so Maneuver Warfare was back on the table. We basically let Ian just leave it set up in place. Bruce's big Air and Armor Würzburg game started, and he had four players go for 5 hours, five and change. I think they went close to six.
Yeah, they had a blast. Oh my God. They were so happy. I was happy watching too. Yeah.
And nobody was, you know, rolling eyes or checking watches or yawning. I mean, everybody was fully engaged and totally into it. That was when we had the By Swords and Bayonets game that Mike, that you were eyeballing as well. The Dawn of Battle game was going on then, and then Mike, your other Fading Glory game was running then. So Maneuver Warfare was a full table. Air and Armor Würzburg was a full table. By Swords and Bayonets was set up. Rich had it set to where you could run two simultaneous games. Mike, similar to what you did with Fading Glory. He ended up only having two players, so it was just Rocky and then Alex playing against each other there. But they were able to crank through that one. Keith sat down to play the Dawn of Battle game with Mike Nagel. And then, Mike, you ran two simultaneous games of Fading Glory.
Yeah, and then after that, Bill Simone ran Battles of the American Revolution.
There were a bunch of those.
So the Saturday session he ran Brandywine and Guilford.
Yeah.
The Friday session was the Savannah game.
Right, but you got three in a weekend. How often do you have that?
Yeah, he did. You know? He did. So Mike, the Fading Glory, the double game where you were having a bounce between the two GMing, it's not a uber complex system. Were you able to maintain both games moving pretty clean, or was it a little bit of overreach?
No, it was actually fantastic because Oliver was there and he's played the game. And so he was able to take, cause he was playing. So he was able to kind of help the new player through some of the rules. So I hate to run simultaneous games like that. People usually complain because they want, you know, your attention focused on the one game, but Oliver was there. So it went smoothly. It was great. And thanks to him again for doing that.
Yeah. Oliver's one of our locals here that's a regular at our Sunday, our first Sunday War Game Days. Oliver actually, I thought it was funny, he brought his copy of the game with him, and I'm like, Mike's got his, like, okay, but you know,
yeah.
I did think it was funny that he brought his along.
Just in case, if that's what happened, we had a backup copy, so that was actually good.
We did.
That was one of the things I noticed, that for the bigger games, you know, about half the people had already played, which you don't always get.
Yeah.
And so I know for World War 85, we literally had three and three split, and it turned out to be the three on NATO, which was much tougher to play. We're all the experienced players, and then the three others were not. But included Bruce Maxwell, so I wasn't too worried. And of course, I was there to guide and show tactics. I mean, people know when they play in my game that I'm not just there to leave you hanging. I'm going to say, well, this is how you do it, because people look and go, why am I not making progress? I'm like, well, try this. But then,
try and go forward.
Right. But then the other games, you know, I found had that too. At the very least, you had the designer teaching you, which was kind of amazing. So, you know, I did two games with Mike Nagel, and, you know, I played a couple of pickup games with Bruce Maxwell because he wanted to play more World War 85. Boy, wow, he handed me my butt the first time, that's for sure.
And we had at least one person who as near as we can tell, had no affiliation with the Dragoons at all, that he's never been to any of our events, is not a part of our forums or our Discord or anything. Gentleman who drove in from Charlotte specifically because Bruce was going to be there, and he wanted to come learn Aaron Armor from Bruce because he'd bought the game. He kind of pushed counters around a little bit for himself, but wasn't quite fully grasping it. But I guess he'd seen a video or two with Bruce kind of explaining some stuff and thought, that's what I need to do. I'm going to go learn from Bruce. So he registered. He showed up. He was there specifically to learn Aaron Armor from Bruce, but he jumped in a bunch of other stuff as well and played in several different games.
But I mean, how cool is that though, right?
He talked to me about that afterwards, about that specific thing that he had come to. He's like, it is just different, you know, learning it from somebody else, let alone learning it from the designer. And everybody, he was commenting that everybody was, you know, so kind and accepting. It's like, yeah, why wouldn't you? Oh my God, you play my game? Sure, sit down. You buy a beer.
And again, you know, everybody there was more than happy to explain the rules and welcome these people that were new to the system. And there was no raised voices. And it was great. You know, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, I don't know that... We certainly had varying experience levels in wargaming in the room, which is going to happen when Bruce is there, right? I mean, the guy's been wargaming for 45 years. I got it. You know, he's been designing for 45 years, but it's we had a wide variety of wargame experiences in the room, but I don't know that we really had any true rookies. I think everybody had several years of wargaming under their belt, that the paradigms of wargaming, kind of the common vernacular and some of the assumptions were all largely understood. We weren't having to explain the idea of combat factors and movement factors. And so this tells you how far you can go. Like, we weren't starting with risk level knowledge and having to build on that. Right. Folks had a basic understanding of what they were getting themselves into.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's true.
All right, afternoon session on Saturday. We had the one you were just talking about, Mike, where Bill had set up two simultaneous Battles of the American Revolution game with Brandywine and Guilford. And I will say, this is the second year that Bill has done this, that he's had two simultaneous BAOR games, because he did this last year also. And it was interesting because last year, I think we had him scheduled for 3 hours, but one of them ended up going like almost five because the guys were still really into it and wanted to keep going. And we had the table space, so we let him go. This time, Bill had two full tables. He had four players sit down for the two different BAOR games. We had the second Dawn of Battle session that, Keith, you just kind of stayed put and kept playing, really.
Yeah, well, because he beat me. He's like, you want to go? Yeah. And also, the scenarios, I have to say about Dawn of Battle, he has 100 scenarios. There's 20 that come in the game. He has scenario packs, additional one. And his research is so meticulous. I'm reading the description of the first battle, and there's these two rivals in the wars after Alexander died for his successors. And the first scenario was, you know, them having their preliminary battle. And then a year later, they had the final battle. And that was the second scenario. I'm like, oh, yeah, we have to play this.
All right. Sorry. Scream of excitement in the background. U.S. scored. We're tied up. Yay. I told you guys I had the game on the side screen. So we also had in that afternoon session, I was GMing the Dawn's Early Light game. Now, that's the Lock and Load Publishing Dawn's Early Light. So that's another Cold War Ghost Hot World War III type game, not the War of 1812 game by GMT. That's the Lock and Load one. That I had a pair of players in that one. And then over in one of the back corners, we had a game of the SAS Rogue Regiment game set up.
Oh, that looks cool.
Yeah, so normally that's just a board game, little circular counters moving around. There are a couple of kind of cardboard slot stand-up pieces for some walls that you can put together here and there around just what's normally a basic flat map, because Chris, who was the GM for that, has brought that game to some of our Sunday war game days in the past. And it's It's a flat map. It's a man-to-man game. It's, you know, a World War II raid by the SAS guys. But Chris has gone and 3D printed a ton of components for this. So he's basically converted it into a small minis game. So it's a board game at heart, but he 3D-ified it. And it looked really good. We've got a couple of pictures of it that'll be in published with the AAR. I think there's one or two pictures that I put up on the socials. But he has 3D-ified what was essentially a man-to-man combat game from World War II. So we had those four running as scheduled games. I know there was at least one Great War Commander game that broke out on one table.
Yeah.
So Combat Commander in World War I, and there was a game of GMT's new The Bell of Treason had broken out. I'm 99% sure that that was Saturday, not Friday, but I'm not 100% sure that that didn't happen on Friday evening. But that is the, you know, the Germans threatening Czechoslovakia and kind of the Czech government with a little bit of Polish interference, kind of figuring out, okay, what are we going to do about this? And so we did have some pickup games starting to break out Saturday morning into Saturday evening as folks had an opportunity to grab an empty table and just throw something on them for fun.
Right.
So that's where you might have had a chance to jump in and do something else if you hadn't been hitting the road.
Yeah, that and that sucked. I would much rather be there playing games and driving back home.
Yeah. There was the weekend of the fall assembly. We got some rain Saturday and most of Sunday that we got the outer bands of what was out at sea. It was a tropical storm. It had kind of lessened significantly by the time it came ashore. There was still going to be a lot of rain. The bulk of it was going north of where we are, but that's the direction that that BB Mike had to drive. That's the direction the Nagels had to drive. That's the direction all the folks going back to DC had to drive. So there were some folks that were genuinely concerned with, hey, am I going to be able to get all the way home because of the weather? So.
Yeah, mine wasn't interstate driving all the way. It's interstate, and then the last, you know, hour and a half, it's back roads, and those are iffy even in ice conditions. So.
Yeah. So that's the point at which we lost Mike, but that didn't stop us from still having fun in your absence. So.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Or in your honor, depending on how
it just,
you
it just wasn't training. As much fun.
I understand. I mean, come on.
So Saturday evening, we only had three games on the schedule, but two of them were pretty big ones. So we had the Dracula game that we'll talk about here in a second. We had a game of the Napoleonic Wars, the GMT one. And for this one, Nathan was again the GM on this one. Nathan has replaced all the counters with minis. He used a whole bunch of the Risk figures because the little Risk minis are basically Napoleonic minis, and then bought the ships. He said he bought them from Amazon, just was able to find plastic ships in a bunch of different colors. And so the copy of Napoleonic, the game of Napoleonic Wars that you see on our pictures was kind of significantly tricked out, but man, did it look good. And they only had three guys in there, so a bunch of the other, they were playing Austria, England, and France. Nathan, as the GM, was playing France, so it was him against the world. And they were using bots to drive all the other countries with folks kind of walking around the table, flipping them over. But they were having a blast and went, you know, the full 4 hours and I think probably a little beyond. The Ancient Civilizations of East Asia game, the gentleman that brought it in was Fred Schachter. Fred is, if he's not the designer, he's co-designer or developer. It's based on the Ancient Civilizations of the Middle East game that GMT currently has in print. This one is currently under development. Fred's one of the main guys doing that work. And so this was a, you know, hand-drawn, sharpied map with a bunch of kind of fairly generic-looking homemade components, but he had, I think, three folks sitting down playing with him for what could take five or take six. And he had three folks sitting down with him. And you know, they banged it out for 4 hours and powered on through.
Season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches is graciously supported by all of our Patreon members, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Miles R., James M., Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Fred and his dog, Joseph Knorr, Patrick Geraghty, Michael Sunborg, Stagger Wing, and Paul LaFontaine. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can support the Regiment of Strategy Gaming as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
and then the Dracula game.
which
was a bit of a chuckle. And Rocky wrote a little bit about it on his blog. It is essentially you're working your way through the actual Dracula novel, right? So this is Dracula loose in London. The characters from the novel are trying to contain all of the people that Dracula is turning into vampires. And so it is the plague of Dracula. They are trying to contain the plague. And part of it is, where's Dracula? Part of it is, where is he awakening all these other people that are now coming after him? It's designed as a solo game, but they were playing it co-op. Keith, do you remember how many people were in that? Was it four?
I think it was four. Yeah, it was full. It looked full up, but it's a solitaire. Like I said, it's solitaire or co-op.
Yeah,
so there's no
limit. See, Mike, that's why they go in the same category for the Charlies.
But Keith just said it's solitaire or co-op. So
are you trying to leverage me for an additional category?
Just another example of how correct I am.
Please don't let me go there. There's nowhere to park. I'm never correct.
This is Mike not just tilting at windmills. This is Mike building windmills against which to go tilt.
There you go.
So
never can have enough windmills.
Yeah. And so there were, you know, a variety of games that were breaking out at this time, you know, that folks were able to get on tables and play. There were, through the start times of these games as they were kicking off, they were kicking off at 5 and 6 o'clock in the evening. Right in that window, there were about five of us or so that went up to the canteen and go sat down and grab a bite to eat up there, watch a little bit of the football that was on the TV up there. But, you know, we ended up with an adult beverage and a gigantic flipping quarter pound hot dog and something else on the side, and paid like $12 for it all. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't high cuisine.
The hot dog was good. It was massive. Yeah. It was massive, and it was good.
It was not high cuisine. It was at least as good, if not better, than what you will get at any of the concourse stalls at Origins. Without going out to a restaurant at Origins.
Yeah,
it was at least that good. And you could get an adult beverage with it, which was nice.
But that's the point, though. If you're involved in this game, you know, you can just run up there and grab something to eat real quick and not have to go out and fight traffic and try to get something. It's there.
Yeah.
Right.
And they had more than just hot dogs.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, you know, there were a handful of us that stepped out to grab ID and then went back in and either joined or watched one of those later evening sessions. I kind of bounced around watching a few of them, having already GM'd some stuff and played some stuff earlier in the day. And that kind of wrapped up Saturday. Now, again, Saturday, we had a couple of folks that for Saturday, it was the end. Even if they had to hit the road, they were going to get up early Sunday morning and hit the road so that they get home with some daylight left in Sunday. So that's where we lost Mike Nagel. And, his wife was down here with him for the trip. She wasn't at the convention. She was gallivanting around Raleigh, checking out some of, look, it ain't the most exciting town to come hang out in. I'll be honest with you, but you know, she had found some things to go do so that Mike could game and GM with other folks. And, they went ahead and hit the road. Rocky hit the road. There were two or three others that went ahead and got out of there. So Sunday morning was a little more sparse. The off the line demo, Keith, I think that's the one you were hoping to play in.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. But what did happen, the SAR Strike Counter-Strike game, that GTS game that Keith mentioned a couple times, the Verdun 1916 Steel Inferno game, which actually won a bunch of Charlies 2 years ago, it was 2 or 3 years ago, that Verdun 1916 game won a bunch of awards. I ended up in that game. I was playing that one with Dave. And then We Are All Mortal, the Cuban Missile Crisis game, was also going on.
It looked so good.
Yeah.
We had
three of the four scheduled games that morning ended up happening. Plus, Bruce ended up with a bigger teaching game of Air and Armor for some folks that was basically a pickup game. Keith had set up his Cracking the Hammer Bastion game. And then there was at least one World at War 85 game that broke out. Did you guys end up with a second one? Y'all ended up playing one on Saturday night too, didn't you?
We played one Saturday. Maybe that was Saturday. No, that was Saturday night because Bruce was done at 5 and we played after that.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then Sunday he wanted to play again and we just played the same scenario, reverse sides.
Yeah. So, you know, Keith got three games of World at War 85 in and Bruce was in all of them. And there were some other games that broke out later in the day because there was a game of Fort Sumter. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There was at least one other something that folks were playing. There was another game of Great War Commander that happened. So there were also a variety of pickup games that folks, you know, just sort of grabbed and ran with. And that's been pretty consistent across the fall assemblies, that we'd get a half dozen to a dozen pickup games in there. I know Matt Fadel was there and had his Memoir 44 set with him and was interested in getting that one out. And I just think we ran out of players Saturday evening as folks started cycling out to dinner.
One of the other things too, and maybe this is something we can work on in the future, is kind of like with Buckeye Game Fest, there's not a whole lot of pre-scheduling some of these pickup games. Like, it's not a case of where, hey, I'm going to bring Memoir 44, and in case anybody wants to play, I'm going to be there from, you know, 2 to 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something we could look at.
Well, at that point, if it's, hey, I'm bringing Memoir 44, who wants to play between 2 and 4? Let's just put the damn thing on the schedule if you're going to be that prescriptive about it, you know?
Right, right.
Well, I mean, but it's good to have free space too, though, because it's...
Oh, absolutely. You
know, somebody like Oliver, who showed up with, he also had like the Gettysburg version of the Napoleonic 20 rule set. And I didn't have time, but I would love to just sit down and play that with him for a couple hours.
Yeah.
Some random stuff going on, but more, instead of just having random stuff like that, like if I knew he was going to show up with that, maybe it would have been easier to chunk some time and actually play it.
Yeah, and Oliver's the only guy I've ever seen get a solo game out at a convention. He pulled out his Deep Space D6 game at one point when he was waiting for something else to start and rolled his way through a couple of those.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Not at all. Filling time. I mean, there's a plethora of solitaire games now that there just weren't back in the day, other than you playing at solitaire. I mean, I'm the kind of person who will play both sides.
Yeah.
Not everybody is like, you know, having designed 8 solo modules for my games, you know, you kind of get customer feedback and you're like, not everybody's like that.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
We weren't planning on breaking new sociocultural ground here, but you admitting you swing both ways. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Ay. But yeah, no, well, I mean, for years, it's like, you know, when I was in high school, we had a game club. You know, when I was in college, I kept in touch with my high school friends, and I was going to college in the same city I went to high school. So, you know, a lot of us were in the area still. And then after college, you know, grad school thing, you start to fragment, and then you're like, well, we're not playing with anybody. So you end up playing solitaire a lot of times.
And then you're chasing kids around. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So when, you know, when the gentleman, I think his name was Chris, came to, you know, do Aaron Armor, it's like he's been playing this solitaire, and now he gets to learn how to do it. And he said, it's just different because you go and you think you're doing it right, and you think you're getting the sense of the game. But when you have it explained out, you just kind of go, oh. And Bruce and I talk about it too. It's like, that's kind of what we look for when we're running these, is when people kind of go, oh, this is the easy part.
And then
they get past the mechanics and into, you know, the game part of it, you know, the tactics.
As we're, you know, it's kind of working our way through the schedule here, where I had it sorted by start times as we were talking about the different things that all made it onto the table. Counting back through, we had 24 scheduled games. We got to 23 of the 24. We lost the one off the line game with Mike Nagel, but the other 23 all happened, plus another half dozen or so pickup games on top of that. So not quite, but almost, well, I think we probably hit 30 games total over the course of the weekend for, you know, 29, 30 attendees and you know, the tables that we had set up that we were able to work with. So all in all, a pretty successful weekend of kind of a good focus on wargaming that cut across a wide swath of different types of, you know, different genres, different levels of difficulty and depth to them, covered a whole bunch of different theaters of conflict. As Mike, as you were looking around while you were there, other than the Napoleonic games that you were running, what was one specific one that you really wish you could have jumped in and that maybe you'll make the time to be able to do next time?
There, well, like I said, By Swords and Bayonets looked really interesting. I really would love to have played that one. And honestly, it's the first time I've seen the Great War Commander on a table. And that is a fantastic looking game. The art in that thing is just, it's awesome too. And I would love to have sat down in that and played through it, because I haven't played it yet. I own it, but I haven't played it yet. How many times have you heard that?
Yeah.
You know? So I would love to have played. And even the Battles of the American Revolution, I love that system and I've played it. But just to sit down with Bill and play it again, that would have been great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Keith, I know you spent a whole bunch of your time playing World of War 85. You got a couple games of Dawn of Battle in. Is there something in particular? Obviously, you know, you were signed up for Off the Line, but didn't make it. Maybe that's your answer. But was there another one out there that you saw?
There were so many. So you have to understand, it's like great, you know, great battles of the American Revolution. I've got, you know, Saratoga sitting on my shelf. My son and I are trying to play Germantown, which is funny because we look at Germantown and go, oh yeah, that's right down the road. But, you know, like I said, I have so many interests that when these new topics come up, it's like, ooh, squirrel. You know, but Great War Commander has always interested me. I've always liked Combat Commander. I don't get to play it as much as I like, but every time I played it, I've had a good time. And a friend of mine actually does play that. But Great War Commander, I'm like, when's the last World War One tactical game I've had? It's like Patrol from SPI.
It's been a while.
Where the solitaire teaching scenario was, okay, you take 10 guys and you go across 10 maps, and if you survive, you win, but there's another line of barbed wire to cross after that. So it's just a teaching game, you know, with random artillery fire and random machine gun fire. But this is a slightly upscale, you know, squad level. It's like, but it's just, it floats my boat because there's so much, as I've been reading a lot about World War One the last few years, and the deeper you go, the more human you get, and you find out, yeah, they did do a whole crap ton of trench raids. It wasn't just this whole, we're sitting in the line. It's like they were trench raiding because they needed information, just like we all do. So as you're having more games on that, there you go. But like I said, you know, Big Bethel, the Civil War. Yeah, I love those kind of systems. There wasn't anything there I didn't like. The only thing I regret not getting any closer to was the Napoleonic one, because I went by, me and someone else went by, and he's like, we have two spots open. I'm like, oh, I'm ready to a game. Because, you know, it's ever since Pax Britannica, you know, I've always liked that kind of game. So you hear me saying I like games. if you force me to pick one, I'm going to go with Great War Commander.
Yeah. No, it's a good problem to have.
Yes.
As you're looking at the schedule and being spoiled for choice in that you don't have enough time to get to all the things that you wanted to get to.
Yeah, there's that survey afterwards that says, you know, are there too many choices? And like, yeah, but that's good.
Well, and one of the things that, I went ahead and pulled up the survey as we've got responses so far, and look, we're not going to get 100% survey response. I get that. You know, for a smaller convention like this, if we can get 50%, I'm thrilled. We're getting close to it at this point. One of the questions is, what did you think of the event selections? And almost 70% said, great variety. I had a hard time deciding what to do. The balance of those said, there's at least one game I was really wanting to play. Nobody picked one of the bottom two options, which were that it was disappointing or nothing I was thrilled with, but it was the best I could do. So,
right.
So everybody had at least one thing they were really jazzed for, and 70% of the respondents said great variety, had a hard time deciding what to do. So that's something that we aim for, particularly given that we're working on all volunteer GMs, right? So we're asking GMs, hey, what do you feel like doing? And that's where, you know, Mike jumps in and says, well, hey, I've got this easy to learn game, but it's 15 years old and it's out of print, but it looks cool and it's easy to learn. So let's throw that on the table for two different sessions, and he gets six players to go for it. So,
right.
And, yeah. I mean, maybe the only chance to play that game, right? It being out of print, then they've always wanted to try it. So, you know, bring it, throw it on a table, and there's your opportunity to play a game you've always wanted to play.
Yeah, I find that really valuable, because there's stuff I look at and go, oh, wow, that looks really cool. And wait, I can't get that for less than $300 because it's out of print.
Yeah.
So if somebody's kind enough to bring that, yeah, I totally agree with Mike on that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, this, for me, it's Buckeye Game Fest is like the only convention that I go to where I'm like not in charge of something. So that's...
Wait, you're allowed to play?
Well... I didn't say that.
Well, he said he's not in charge.
Like wild and wacky here.
Yeah,
he's not in charge of it, but he still has to run stuff. So
yeah, so for BGF, I'll sign up to GM some things, and there are times where if we have an odd number of players, I will jump in as a player in the game, which has happened at BGF a couple of times. But BGF, because I'm not also worried about making sure that, you know, badges are getting handed out or that folks are getting the break they need for lunch or whatever else is going on, that I can just worry about putting a game out there that I could schedule like a 4-hour game if I wanted to for BGF, and that wouldn't be a problem. For something like Origins or the Fall Assembly, where I'm also the administration of the event, if I'm going to put something on a table, it's going to be a short something. So it's got to be something that I already know really well and don't have to think about how to play, so I can answer questions a lot quicker.
Right.
But I can also get up and running a lot quicker around the prep time. So there's about a half a dozen games that I continue really default back to. That's where Dawn's Early Light came from. I know that system really well, and so it's one that I can just grab and run with pretty quickly. There's about a half a dozen games in there, and so I try to not do the same one from year to year. Last year, I actually got out some of the SPI quads, similar to Quadfest, and so we got... I think it was Bundeswehr last year. We've done a couple of those different SPI quads that we've got now just to have an older something to put on the table for the, for Mike, like you said, it's a chance for people to play something they may not otherwise be able to find.
Yeah.
So that's where, as we're looking at volunteer GMs, you know, Keith's promoting the game he's designed. He wants to, you know, show off the thing he knows. Obviously you enjoy doing it or you wouldn't have spent all the time working on the design work. But you know, who knows? Maybe they still get an extra sale or two out of it. It's a little different for Keith as the designer coming to something like this, where it's sort of clearly, hey, let me promote my stuff and then play some other things if I can. Whereas, you know, Nathan Wagner just submitted a couple of games. He submitted Napoleonic Wars and Combat Commander. We said, all right, cool. We're going to put them on the schedule. Here they go. And that's what we ran with. That's what Richard did. You know, Richard put Swords and Bayonets and We Are Mortal, said, how about these? Here's a newer, more popular one. Here's a weirder, off-the-wall one that people might not ever get a chance to play otherwise. We try to mix and match that. It seemed to work out.
I'll tell you what was missing. An air game. I don't recall there being an air
game. If only I knew a designer with an air game.
Like I was telling you, the World War 85 air game, I need a developer. Yeah. So because my developer has fallen through. So, and I can't work more on it. Yeah. So go from there. But
we also didn't really have a naval game unless you count the boats floating around in Napoleonic Wars.
Well, that's, you know, you're right. You don't. And I'm sitting there staring on my shelf at Submarine. And I used to love Submarine. I'm like, yeah, that would work.
We need Mike to bring Flat Top.
Have you ever played Double Blind Referee Flat Top?
No, but that's what I want to do. I bought two copies of it, and I want to do that at some point.
That is a freaking amazing experience. We did it with CV too, which was Jacinto's Midway version of that.
Yeah, I've got that one too.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
when the Wasp showed up, we're like, "What do you mean the Wasp? It's on the West Coast." Well, you know.
As we start to look forward to future iterations of the Fall Assembly, this is now our third year. This is the first year of not having the game store there to kind of support and subsidize us. We are sort of standing on our own 2 feet, but we were able to bring in a decent crowd. 30-ish folks is probably not enough to sustain a full long-term convention over the long haul. I do think we want some growth, but not growth spurt, sort of steady incremental growth. Even Winterfest will, you know, there may be 30 people that show up in any given year, but they've got a core of about 50 that on any given year, five of them can't come, but five different ones are able to be there. So, Mike, what do you think, you know, what are our next steps in terms of the growth of what we've got here? Is it switching up some of the game offerings? Is it bringing in some additional designers or personalities that may attract folks that are going to show up because that person is there to see? Is it that we eventually get big enough to bring in a vendor or two, not so much for the game sales, but also to be there to highlight their product line? And hey, we've got a table for this publisher that they're running their games all weekend long on that table. What are kind of the next steps we need to get to?
Yeah, so I think the selection of games is fine. Like Keith was saying, I mean, just there's a lot of different things that were represented, to let the GMs pick the games, you're going to almost guarantee you have a good session because they're probably picking stuff they want to run and they like, and they want, you know, others to enjoy it. So I think we're okay there. The pickup games I talked a little bit about, I kind of would like to see maybe that expanded just a wee bit more. Although it was great this time, the designers being there, that's fantastic. I would love to see more designers, different designers show up. And because, like you said, that
didn't show up.
Yeah, you hear that, Keith? He's sick of you being there.
He wants to me.
But that's a draw, right? I mean, to have people come in and play with the designers, that's awesome. And then, you nailed it. The getting some vendors in there might be nice, you know. Now, I did make my pilgrimage to Gamers Armory, and I did make a purchase. So we're not that far from the Gamers Armory, so it's easy to get to. But it'd be nice to have vendors in there with us selling some stuff and talking about what they may have coming up. And then the other thing that I would like to see is maybe start adding slowly some rolling games, some maybe not monster games, but maybe a rolling game that goes on over a couple of days with maybe the same players, maybe different players, but just have some a rolling game that continues throughout the convention. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, we tried that the first year, and I think the first year was the wrong year to do something like that.
yeah.
You know, it was still new enough. We should have just focused on let's just get good games on tables. We tried to do a rolling game the first year, similar to what we've done at Origins. You can get away with it at Origins because there's enough.
Yeah,
there are enough people at the convention that you can rotate people playing in the big game without rotating only the same like five people through it, and they get a little burned out on it.
Yeah.
I can tell you, you need a team to run something like that. I mean, we've done that before with World War V. When we were first promoting it, we would do the monster scenarios, and we'd run it all weekend. So your team has to be able to handle that because that's all they're doing.
Yeah.
And then the players can rotate it, and it's really for the benefit of the players. And the way we do our teams is like, you can come in for a turn, you can come in for a die roll, whatever, but there's always somebody from our team who can step into play one side or the other if there's not enough players, and people can come in and out, which fits people's schedules, but the team that's running it, it's hard on them, I can tell you that.
Generally, you only need two people to pull it off. Where you've got one that stays at the game for that entire session, and the other one can float in and out. And then for the next session, they trade places, right? One of them is anchored to the table. The other one floats in and out. Mike, I think it'd be a great thing to do if we get into a slightly bigger location. I think for the one we were in, I think it would be tough to give up one of those tables for a full day of nothing but a single game.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing you could do is, it's like you said, is maybe it's you advertise, hey, we're gonna have a session of World in Flames that's going to go on the entire convention. We need X number of players, and they just sign up, and that's all they do the entire convention. Because there are players out there, and I'm one of them. There's certain games that we would love to play that you just don't have the space or the time set aside to do it.
Yeah.
And this would be a great place to do that, and that's going to draw people in. They're going, oh, you want to play Here I Stand? Sure, I'll come, and we'll do that for a day or two. That sounds great.
Yeah, and that may be something that we look to do, you know, in the future that we can try and pull off. You know, we'll just have to see. Keith, same question. But you're seeing it a little differently because, you know, Mike's a little more in the background helping organize stuff, whereas you're just sort of a guy we shanghaied into showing up and, you know, teaching his game to a bunch of people.
Your check is in the mail.
Oh, I got a check. Excellent. Well, it also means I can just throw stuff at the wall and not worrying about whether it sticks or not. And you guys can go, what is he thinking? He knows nothing about this. I'm like, that's true.
You're not wrong.
I like the flow of these small to medium sized games, and I having a larger, you know, weekend long thing, it's possible, but that's almost a different convention. It's like Constant World, Monster Game Convention. You know, I'm not sure it would bring that much. I think having more pieces, you know, more selection as you increase in size, is, for me, speaks that you're going to have something to do. If you want to have a centerpiece thing, does that become the theme for that year's convention? And now you're into, are we restricting the games we're bringing in? Or you're going to have all these war games and Dracula, which is a great addition.
Yeah.
But I mean, Mike, you're right. There's so many games that, you know, are really, really big, but it takes a day to set them up and a day to take them down and a week to play. I don't know if you remember when they used to do the longest day at World Board Game Championships every year, maybe they still do, where that's all people would do. They would come in and set up for a day, and then they play for a week and get as far as they could get, and then they take it down for a day. That's all they did all week.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the only disadvantage of having a game like that.
You would be limited in the size of game. Like I said, World in Flames, but there's no way. It would be something like Here I Stand or something that's time-consuming, but not, you know, unmanageable to set up and actually
play. Well, I mean, that said, though, Mike, I mean, when we did – I say we, when Gary and Lee did Third World War at Origins 2 or 3 years ago, whenever that was, they started setting up one evening. It took them 2.5 to 3 hours. So Keith, what they did was the Compass Games re-release of Third World War. They did the three Europe maps. They left off the Persian Gulf map because the table geometry wasn't going to work. Yeah. So they set up the three main maps. We were able to fit everything on one giant 5x8. And they ended up doing six sessions of the whole thing across the longer weekend, but we've got an extra, you know, 2 days to work with at Origins. But if we were to set up something like that, so Friday morning, get in and start setting up kind of early, you could probably get one session in Friday night, two sessions Saturday. And as long as travel's not a factor, you could get one more in Sunday morning. morning before you'd have to break it down Sunday afternoon. So you would get 16 hours worth of gameplay out of something like that if you do them in 4-hour blocks. Saturday, if you leave off the Sunday morning when you want to power through a little bit, you could probably do 4 Saturday sessions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it would be a long Saturday for those two people GMing it. Maybe you do 5-hour sessions and you just do 3. You do 1 Friday and 2 Saturday and call it good there. If yeah. somebody wanted to do that, we could do that. I just, yeah. in the space we were in this year, I don't know that it would have worked because that takes 20% of your tables out of circulation.
Right. I think Keith is correct in that with something this small in this short of a time period, if you did something like that, it would be one table and one table only because the draw is the smaller games, right? Where you have this buffet of games you can choose from. That is the real draw. But you could do it maybe with one table, and it would have to be done just right for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, there's a couple of different options. Some of the other things that have been floated out there is, you know, we've been a very heavy war game focus, and we have not gotten very war game adjacent much at all. We haven't done much in the way of minis at all. The SAS Rogue Regiment game this year was a bit of an aberration because it's a board game, but Chris had 3D printed everything, so it looked like a minis. I mean, he turned it into a minis game. Other than that, the closest we got to a minis game, we did a Star Wars Armada game. We did 2 of them, I think 2 years ago, maybe it was last year, where we had a couple of games of Star Wars Armada. And other than that, it's like Memoir 44, which isn't even really a minis game. You're just using the figures for, you know, counting damage.
Let's go.
If you're going to expand into wargame adjacent types of things, something like Fury of Dracula works. Bell of Treason or Congress of Vienna or something similar. Oh, cool. Hey, the U.S. scored again. They're up 2-1. For anybody following this in real time, 6 years from now when you're listening, there is the ability to get some sort of war game adjacent type things. John Company, you kind of feel beat up by the time you're done playing it, but that's just the emotional toll the game takes on you. That's not strictly a war game, but I think it's one that would still fit with what we're doing. I think it would be okay to have something like that in there. Mike, if you had one of your sci-fi 4X games, like a Space Empires 4X, I still think fits totally fine with the theme of what we're doing.
Yeah.
I think it would be challenging to incorporate some sort of role-playing type game, like a Twilight 2000, thematically would fit. I'm not sure it would fit in terms of the format of what you would need for table space around which to try to play an RPG.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that would fit as the conventions currently construct. That doesn't mean we don't eventually get there.
You have a table for an RPG scenario. It's the same size as one for, you know, a game or two.
Yes, but the challenge, you could do it. It'd be better to have a round table than a rectangular one. Again, you can do it. My concern is in the facility we're in, where we've had smaller facilities thus far, I think it would be a challenge for that game to happen in that environment. I think thematically we'd be okay. I wouldn't mind seeing an additional minis game or two. We've got a huge minis community here in the area, but a lot of those guys were playing at Southern Front the month before in September. So maybe we bring some of the Southern Front guys over and add a minis game or two just to have an opportunity for people to add that to their buffet.
Well, as long as there's enough room on the table for it.
Yes. Yeah. So I think realistically, it's probable we will be in that same space next year. They seem to really like us. We'll probably get them to cut us a deal on the space a little bit for next year. I think we liked the space. We enjoyed having control of the room to ourselves where we weren't sharing the environment with anybody else. And I think some of the amenities being convenient and nearby was good.
Yeah.
Cheap beer never hurts for
working. And it was good.
It's good cheap beer. So I think that is good. I think we could easily absorb another 5 to 8 people in that building without a problem at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think if we had more than 10, then we're going to be sort of straining the seams a little bit. And you know, more than 15, we need a new place. That's a problem I am happy to have to solve, though, right? When we start pushing 50 attendees, I am happy to have to go look for a new location.
Right. Right.
So yeah, if we can add 5 more people next year, that'd be a pretty solid attendance bump. I think, you know, we add one more table to the, you know, official table count that we've got in there. I think that's a pretty solid growth curve for us. You know, now we just got to, okay, listeners, 5 of y'all out there, save the date. It's 9 to 11 October next year in 2026. We're going to do all this again. The last thing, just, you know, in terms of looking ahead to next year and lessons learned, this probably isn't something you guys would have seen. Mike, you and I have talked about it a little bit. Keith, it's not something you really would have seen on the attendee side of things. I think we got to get registration info out earlier. One of the things that I've tried to be careful about is I don't want to open up too much for registration without having some of the games already populated so that the people registering have a sense of what it is they're coming to play.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an unfair idea, but I also look at Circle DC, where it doesn't happen until, you know, April of next year, but Kevin's already opening up registration now, and there's no games on the agenda at all. It's just they know Kevin puts on a good convention in a cool location, and that there's going to be a whole bunch of particular people there showing off whatever the newest, coolest thing is they're working on, and we'll figure out what that is between now and April. But folks go because they know they're going to see cool shit at Circle DC.
Yeah.
I think if we can get to the point where people expect there's going to be cool shit at the Fall Assembly, that they're willing to register to be at the Fall Assembly, and they'll just add whatever games, you know, when the registration opens up, because they're expecting there's going to be cool games there.
Yeah, and if you've always wanted to go to a convention, but you don't know what to expect, this is a great introductory convention for you, because it's nothing like Origins. I mean, it's smaller, so it's a lot more manageable. This is a great introduction to conventions, and then you're going to have a good time. I mean, like I said, everybody there is nice, super helpful. Bring a game you want to play. You're going to have a good time. It is a very fun experience.
Yeah. For folks looking for a comparable, like, the War Room alone at Buckeye Game Fest is bigger than this whole convention.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is not a bad thing. Like, it's, again, we're 3 years old, man. We're growing. It's going to take a little bit of time. I'm not at all unhappy with where we are on the growth curve. I know it's a slow and steady build. I don't want to just shoot up and attend, because at that point it's artificial and it could collapse at any time. I want a slow and steady growth. I think that is realistic. But I think the key thing is making sure the people that are there are having the best time they can have while they're there.
That's, yeah.
And that they want to come back. I think, you know, we get to that point, I'm happy.
Yeah.
We're kind of at the end of the amount of time we're expecting to record here. Parting shots. Keith, I'm going to let you go first. Any final wrap-up thoughts on the Fall Assembly as a whole here?
Well, I've done this, you know, I've done it since the start. I've been in 3 years, and I can honestly say I've had a fantastic time each time. One footnote I want to put to this year, because I had the ability to, I had somebody who was able to give me a ride, but sometimes people at the convention have rides. There is a supermarket nearby, a Food Lion nearby this particular place. And in that little mini mall, there are actually like 4 or 5 restaurants.
Yeah.
And we went to one. It was touted as Nepalese, Himalayan, I guess it was the name of it. But it actually had, you know, the Nepalese dishes were like tucked in, but there's like Chinese and Indian, and it was, the food was just amazingly flavorful. It was amazing. But there was, I think there was an Ethiopian restaurant tucked in there. There's a sports bar tucked in there, along with Food Lion, if you want to buy some food and bring it back. I brought a couple of salads for lunch because I was on the way in, and stuck it in that refrigerator in the little tiny kitchen there. So food's not, it's not just the bar food. You can actually go get some real food very close by. It's a couple blocks up by car. But you know, that, just being able to relax about that, if we did find a moment to do that, which I did happen to, but there was plenty of gaming time. And if I had any, call it downtime in quotes, it would have been just to catch my breath and then kind of look at our table and go, ooh, shiny. And go, you know, play in Mike's, you know, Napoleonic's game, because that intrigued me. There wasn't anything I didn't look over and go, do I have time for that? So I highly recommend. 2 thumbs up.
Yeah, no, it's great. I appreciate the kind words. Mike, parting thoughts.
I mean, Keith, like he said, it's this third year. I've been to all 3, and they keep getting better each year. I left this one thinking I can't wait till the next one. That's how much fun they are. And one thing we failed to mention was I even look forward to Thursday night. We kind of have a unofficial get together at Craft Public House. And I look forward to that. That's awesome because we sit there, great menu, great food, and you just sit there and talk to people and just have a good time.
Yeah, I was bummed. I got in a little later, and also there was an Eagles game, which of course I they lost. But there you go.
You should have been there with us eating dinner.
Yeah, right. Had to watch it. I was wearing my Eagles gear.
For what it's worth, the Eagles game was on TV where we were.
Yeah, it was.
I got in a little later, so I was a little tired than I usually am.
I know.
Other than that, but I've been there before. I can only agree with Mike.
We ended up with six folks at the pregame gathering this time. So we had, we've had as many as nine and as few as five. This year we had six. The Nagels both joined us. Another one of the locals joined us. And then Mike and Bill were there. They've become a little bit of the house location for the pregames. Because it's convenient for everybody. It is a local place, so we're not stuck going to a chain restaurant. And it's got a pretty expansive menu with a lot of options on it for you. So that works out well.
Good food. Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, thank you both for joining the podcast, but thank you also for your support of the Fall Assembly. I mean, this is, we can't do this without the GMs, and you guys are two of them. So, I definitely appreciate y'all stepping up to be GMs, but I'm glad that you enjoy it enough to want to keep doing this. And so that is great.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
I would love to be able to get more of the Core Dragoons to show up. I mean, we get, a couple of them there, a couple of the writing staff there and some of the forum crew. It'd be nice to get the rest of y'all to show up, doggone it. but it's a good mix of this year. We had roughly one third of the crew were the locals that are the regulars for the Sunday War Game Day, the first Sunday War Game Days, or other folks that are active parts of the local gaming community here in the Raleigh, Cary, Durham area. We had about a third of folks that were kind of directly connected to the Dragoons, guys like, Mike and Keith, who are part of some of our events crew or the writing team, or folks that are part of our Origins crew, but they have some sort of fairly direct connection to the Dragoons. And we had about one third folks that just signed up and showed up, like the gentleman from Charlotte who came into game with Bruce. We had a dude who just recently moved to the area who lives down in Fayetteville who was looking for some wargaming and couldn't find any there, so he came up here because he saw the convention. He figured he'd meet some people to come game with. We had Jeff and Nathan kind of wandered in because Nathan was actually, he played a bunch of games with us this summer at Origins, but he saw that we were doing a convention, said, hey, this isn't that far away, let's go check it out, and got his buddy Jeff to show up with him. So we had about a third local folks, about a third Dragoons folks, and about a third just kind of wandered in off the street, which is cool. Like, we're happy to have those. That's how you grow. Would love to have some more of those. If we can add three people each to those one third pie slices, we got nine more folks show up next year, and we got a crowd, and that'd be great. So, cool. Audience, thank you for sticking with us through this semi-self-indulgent discussion of our convention. But between this and the AAR and the videos and photos that we've posted, Mike's got some video over on his channel. Rocky's got some coverage over on his blog. I'll be honest, you'd have to go looking to see who else might have talked about this somewhere. I know Mike Nagel had put a couple of notes about it in one of the threads at ConSim World where he supports his games in those discussions, so you can find some of it there. Take a look. If it sounds like something you're interested in, we hope to see you next year again, 9 to 11, October 2026. We are halfway through season 15 here with Mentioned in Dispatches. We still got a couple more designer discussions coming up over the next few weeks. We also, right now, the plan is we've got a discussion around some of the other fall conventions. Later in the fall, we've got a whole bunch of FoxCon got canceled, but you still got SD Hist, you still got Compass Expo, you still got BatosCon that's going to be happening out there. KublaCon Fall is going to be happening out there. So there's a variety of them. RockCon is still out there. So there's a bunch of them that wargamers may be showing up at that we have yet to occur this fall. And so we're going to bring some of those folks together to talk about that. Some other designer interviews. Jim Day is supposed to be joining us later this, later this season. We've got him coming to talk. And we've got some of the guys from War Game Design Studio. We're going to have a couple of computer devs swing by and have a conversation with us. So, still got some exciting stuff for the rest of the season. Hope you're able to join us, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches.